The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjoe Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjoe Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is Next Generation Data Storage Beyond Coolness. Our guest for today's show is Paul Massaglia. Paul is the Chief Technology Strategist with Agami Systems. Good morning, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Sandage.
So how's business? Keeping busy?
We are extremely busy. As you may know, Agami is a small, I'd say, late-stage startup company.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always more to do than there are people and resources to do it with. And so, for example, we get in here at 7 o'clock in the morning to participate in talk radio shows.
All right, sorry about that. I made you wake up early, but I guess hope this is going to be an interesting conversation. So talking about data storage in general, we know that storage has been an integral part of IT infrastructure from day one, because without that, we will not be able to do anything, literally. But at the same time, it does not seem to have gained the level of importance amongst other things which constitute IT. So when we come to really talking about putting some more money into it, we've already put a lot into it in terms of server hardware, controller cards, this, that, and the other, and other technologies that would be used to manage it. Now we come back and say, hey, we got to innovate further. We got to take it to the next level. First problem would be they would not understand what you mean. Second is they would say, how do you say if I were to totally revamp what I put in there? A hard disk is a hard disk. Why should I wipe this whole thing out and start afresh?
Wow. There's a lot in there. So the first thing I would say is that data storage is all about the information and information technology. I've been in the industry, I think I entered in 1962, so I've seen a lot of evolution over time. And when I first started working on my very first computer, which was like 8 feet long and 6 feet high and 2 feet, 3 feet deep, information technology was all about the processing, and the data was almost incidental. And over the intervening years, we've seen a complete reversal where it's much, much more about the data than it has been in the past. And, of course, the data sits on the storage, and so the storage has to be reliable and robust, and it has to perform adequately to meet the information technology's needs. So I think it's, from the perspective of a storage person, data storage is finally assuming its rightful role in the information technology spectrum. It's getting the importance finally that I think has always been due to it. It's just taken the user community some time to recognize that.
Now, this is a typical IT function, or you can say what typically IT will deal with it. What the end user thinks about is I need everything, whichever was, any transaction ever that occurred has to be available. I should be able to slice and dice it and things of that nature. But and they want that capability, but when it comes to costing it and looking at the effort that it will take and the gestation period for that to happen, everybody kind of pushes back, no, this is going to take way too much. I don't know whether I would want to pay for something like this. How do you fight those battles?
Well, the first thing I'll say is that I think they're right. That it does, you know, there was a muffler company that ran a television commercial series for a long time, where the tagline was, "I'm not going to pay a lot for this muffler." And I think users are kind of in that situation with regard to data storage. And if we think about maybe the last 4 or 5 years in the storage industry, what's happened is there's been a tiering that has developed, and users have demanded and vendor companies have responded by creating storage at different price, performance, and capability points, and that gives users the option of matching the importance of their data from a business standpoint with the money they spend to store it online and have high performance access to it and so forth. So I think there's things in the data storage industry happen over multiple years. You don't always recognize the trends because they're sort of low frequency. But there has been a very definite trend toward dividing online data storage into tiers to give users a sort of price performance range of choices for keeping their data online.
If we talk about the race between storage innovation and bringing that innovation in-house in an organization versus working on a SOA architecture or some latest and greatest thing which is supposed to provide a very explicit ROI, how does storage ever win that race?
Like anything else that companies or even individuals buy in large quantities, it will never be low enough cost to satisfy the user. The users are always pushing on the cost aspect of it. But for data storage in particular, there are a couple of special factors or mitigating factors, you might call them. And the biggest one is that users very much recognize the importance of data to operating an enterprise. For many, many businesses, in the service realm or in the information provider realm, no data equals no business. And so they demand a level of capability, but at the same time, they're pushing on the storage industry, cut the cost, cut the cost, cut the cost. As you mentioned, the very visible benchmark in the data storage industry is what's the cost of the high-end disk drive of the day. And people look at that and they see it's moving down pretty steadily over time. I think it obeys a kind of a Moore's law of twice the capacity over, I don't know, every couple of years.
Every 18 months, I guess that's what
that's the Moore's law. Yeah, I'm not sure what the time number is for storage, but it's pretty steadily decreasing in price. And they look at that and they say, that means that my system should cost half. And what they're perhaps not looking at is the mechanical content, the support infrastructure that stands between the raw disk drive and the fully baked storage system that they can trust their data to.
So now talking about the fact, and this is a question which I think should amuse you, is that storage infrastructure is always considered a geek thing. And we have always spoken about IT strategic plan, which is drawn out for different companies. One is that does it deserve to be on that plan for it to become strategic, for it to catch the eyes of executive management and to be discussed? Or is it something we are better off instead of fighting a losing battle with executive management because they don't understand that geek part of it? You better keep it and roll that cost up into other so-called mini projects or across different projects for it to not unnecessarily raise a flag, and you get your things done as well.
Well, this is a little bit like buying a house. I don't think anybody that buys a house pays an awful lot of attention to the plumbing, but they sure expect it to be there. And the data storage infrastructure, by which I'm assuming that you mean the networks that interconnect the storage and connect the storage to the servers and so forth.
Even storage infrastructure as well as the core storage part of it. All of that, if that has to be innovated and you want new things, then would you want that to be one of the bullet points in your IT strategic plan that, yes, we have to work on something like this?
I'm not sure. Even if we're talking about the base storage systems, I'll draw the analogy further to the foundation in a house. Again, something you don't pay a lot of attention to, but something that absolutely has to be there. I think in general, companies think in terms of IT strategy from the application on down. I need this application to deliver service to my customers or to ship my product or whatever it is that they're doing. What does that mean? Well, that means I have to find an application software that does what I want to do. I have to find servers to run it on. I have to find connections to interconnect it to users, and I have to find storage for the data. So there are really two dimensions to an IT strategy. The business one, what does my business need to accomplish? And then, okay, what sort of infrastructure do I need to put in place to accomplish that? I think data storage in particular falls into the latter bucket. And so it becomes the part of the plumbing piece of the IT strategy, not the how do I deliver value to my business piece.
All right. So now when we talk about storage needs, we are seeing that we want to store everything that ever as a transaction occurred and any information that we ever created or we acquired or we received from someone. Thing is that we don't want all of that to be available to us all the time. Yes, we have a pride. I mean, we put our own valuables in our locker, you know, a bank locker, but we don't always go every day to pull that out. And if that's the case, then we really don't need a very, very high capacity, very, very high performing storage infrastructure, really. You could use the 80-20 rule to not have ever that need, which will require you to totally innovate your storage just because you need more. Because you're not using everything, you could be very well keeping that in a vault.
I almost agree.
Okay.
first of all, from a user standpoint, I think they would like absolutely everything to be available absolutely all the time. It's more a question of affordability. And as we spoke to earlier, this notion of multiple tiers of storage kind of is the industry's response to that need, where the transaction processing system that takes orders or runs sales for a business is an absolutely have to be there. I don't have a business without it. They'll pay more for that than they will for customer service. I'd really like to have 6 months or 12 months of records that are accessible during the course of a phone call. But if that's going to cost me as much as my active data, probably can't afford that. So I look for a lower cost solution. And I think the industry is responding pretty well in recent years in terms of delivering lower cost solutions, for example, using the so-called commodity disk drives that were originally developed for personal computers. You see companies introducing this massive array of idle disk technology, where it's not like a disk in the sense that you can get at data in milliseconds, but it's also not like a tape in the sense that it takes tens of seconds to get at data. You see companies introducing technology like deduplication, which weeds out duplicate bit patterns in data, and it stores the duplicates once and points to them. And so for certain kinds of data, you can get huge compression factors, which results in a much lower cost per physical bit, or cost per logical bit, I should say, of keeping data online.
So would you say that is the kind of innovation that we are looking at versus trying to keep coming up with cheaper storage solutions? Innovation is not always about for making it cheap.
Well, I think the cheap comes in terms of the cost per bit to keep data online. So it might cost me $1,000 for a box full of disk drives, but if I can somehow cram more data into that box full of disk drives by compressing it or by deduplicating it, then as a user, my cost per bit goes down. As a vendor, my cost of delivering those bits stays the same because I deliver physical bits. The user stores logical bits.
Let's talk about this ripple effects that you may have when you're trying to change your existing storage infrastructure. What are we doing here? Because we are changing multiple things at any given time within an organization, whether it's application, whether it's networking, and other parts of the IT, which makes the whole thing run. And we also want to renovate how you are handling your storage. So many things happening, so much interconnectivity, so much interdependency that we see within IT. We will have some regression issues like we talk in software development. which would cause a problem in one if we were to touch the other. How much of that issue do we actually expect when we were to innovate our storage, especially in a mature organization? And what are the, you can say, strategies which we could use to prevent such ripple effects? So let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Okay.
From the stock market floor to your computer, you're listening to Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
What I want to be when I grow up by Johnny Mike.
Dad, it's John. I got the promotion. We'll call him John Jr.
You'll speak over 500 million words in your lifetime, but none of them will be as important as the words you use to tell your six-year-old he has cancer. CureSearch.org connects you to the most comprehensive research and advice on childhood cancer and to other families who know exactly what you're going through. CureSearch.org. You're not as alone as you feel. Brought to you by CureSearch and the Ad Council.
If you're looking to improve sales results, increase revenue, acquire new customers, or just retain existing ones, listen to Sales Talk with nationally recognized sales and customer relationship management consultant, speaker, sales trainer, and author, Russ Lombardo. On Sales Talk, Russ provides insights and knowledge about today's best-selling techniques and methodologies. Learn about the latest sales-related software and tools to help organize your efforts for achieving more efficiency and get a better understanding of what services are available to improve sales results. On Sales Talk, Russ Lombardo and his expert guests get down to brass tacks and talk about what's needed today to succeed in sales. Whether you're a sales manager, sales professional, business owner, or entrepreneur, you'll benefit from the business insights, experience, and knowledge. Sales Talk with Russ Lombardo, broadcast each Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel. Sales Talk with Russ Lombardo, insights, experience, and knowledge at the click of a mouse.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is Next Generation Data Storage Beyond Coolness. Our guest for today's show is Paul Massaglia. Paul is the Chief Technology Strategist with Agami Systems. Before the break, we started talking about the ripple effects that we could expect when we are trying to bring in some innovation, some revamping into the storage that we have existing in an organization. And while we are trying to bring that in, we also have other equally important initiatives going on, whether it's application architecture, renovation, whether you want to bring some process flows that need to be put in place. While that is in the front end, but still there are so many pieces in IT that have to work together seamlessly for IT to function as it's supposed to function. How do we very carefully and in a very collaborative manner work with other teams and with other technologies to make sure when this new storage innovation is put in place, it is a seamless transition? And what are the challenges and what are the strategies organizations are using to deal with those challenges?
Well, Sanoj, you're the master of the broad sweeping question. There's a lot in there. The first thing I would say is that thinking of data storage in comparison to, let's say, servers and operating systems, or particularly application development platforms, storage has been a model of consistency in terms of the standards it uses to interface to the rest of the IT infrastructure. And so without trivializing the challenges that face people as they try and upgrade their storage plants, I would say that the relationship between data storage and between data access and applications has remained relatively constant over the last, say, 15 years, whereas if you look at how applications were being developed, we've gone completely from these highly integrated, custom-designed OLTP systems to more of a web-based architecture, to a .NET for providing services in the Microsoft world. So there's a lot more churning that goes on, I think, higher in the IT food chain than down at the data storage level. At the data storage level, we have some of the most enduring standards in IT. We have the SCSI for the device to system interconnect, our fiber channel. We have the NFS and SIFS standards for file server access. And those pretty much have remained constant to a first approximation for relatively long periods of time. Where the challenges come, I think, in the data storage arena is I used to store 100 gigabytes on a disk. Now I can store 300 gigabytes on a disk. But boy, I have a lot of those 100 gigabyte disks. How do I move all my data from those to the new disks? And so what we see is, in fact, something that we're having to help our own customers out with is one of the big challenges they face in keeping up with the Joneses, data storage-wise, is to get their data from an old storage plant that they would really like to retire because of the maintenance cost or the energy it consumes or whatever, onto new storage that's more efficient, higher performance, whatever. But boy, it takes a long time to migrate a terabyte from one storage system to another. So the challenges I think that storage faces as IT evolves and moves forward are, to a first approximation, within the storage realm, unlike the challenges higher in the food chain. In other words, there's a sort of a constant relationship between data storage and the rest of IT. Now, having said that, I'll also say that I believe that we're on something of a cusp there, because as data storage systems mature and people start to talk about things like adding value to the data from inside the storage system, for example, doing virus checking inside the storage system, for example, doing indexing and content analysis inside the storage system, I think we're about to see a fairly significant change happen there. But again, it's a change that will happen over multiple years, not something that will snap into place overnight.
Now, talking about the fact that you want to make things simple, that is one thing which was already, over the years, we know that we can drop something in a hard disk array and it is independent of which disk it's sitting in. You'll still get the information and things of that nature. What more simplicity are we looking at?
Well, a very wise friend of mine tells me periodically that where you stand depends on where you sit. And, of course, I sit in a company that specializes in network-attached storage, and so I'm a pretty strong believer in simplification. If you look at the biggest storage array you can buy from the biggest storage array vendor, you can put something on the order of 2,000 disk drives into that one storage array. And I have a fundamental belief that 2,000 of anything is much too much to manage by hand. And so what I see is a move toward things like network-attached storage. I'm not necessarily saying that's the be-all and end-all of data storage, but what network-attached storage fundamentally does is it hides all the complexity of dozens or even hundreds of disk drives from the outside world, and it takes the management of those things inside the box and presents an abstraction to the outside world that in general is much more useful at the application and administrative level. That abstraction, of course, is the file system, which can be arbitrarily large. It can change size. It can have hundreds of thousands or even millions of files in it. The files can come and go at will. Those are much, much more useful concepts to deal with at the application and administrative levels than here's a disk drive. What do I do with it? I put it into an array. I put my data on the array. And I have to manage where things are and how they're being used. So I think an important step in terms of simplification is to sort of raise the level of abstraction at which people deal with their data storage.
So now you mentioned that other vendors or whosoever else is working on those large arrays, and they've got 2,000 disk drives. So you're saying that in other form of innovation that has happened, the abstraction has not been made available. People are literally going to individual disks and trying to manage them. Do you think
exactly. It's both better and worse. any disk array that you can buy today virtualizes the storage inside it. It doesn't present physical disks to you. It presents virtual disks, right?
Yeah.
But there's still disks. I mean, in theory, it's possible to create, again, take this big storage array as an example. It's possible to create even more virtual disks than there are physical disks inside. And there's a 10-to-1 ratio. For every 10 physical disks, I create one virtual disk. Okay, I still have to export that virtual disk to a server or a cluster of servers. I still have to create a file system or a database on top of that. That's done up at the server level. And if we think in terms of 2,000 disks in the system, we're thinking in terms of 200 virtualized pieces of storage. So that's 200 management situations that I have to manage on different servers for different applications. If I can push all that management inside the storage box, I cut way down on what I actually have to administer. That means configure. That means establish user access rights to. That means place the data properly on. That means protect the data. I only have to do that for the storage box because it's exporting an abstraction to as many servers as I have.
But is it not creating a single point of failure as well?
So single points of failure occur at many levels. And starting at the base disk drive, at the electronics, the logical processing inside the storage box, out onto the network and up into the application server. And I think, again, if you look at any storage system that's available on the market today, they all have mechanisms for protecting against failures at every one of those levels. It's, again, one of the things we were talking about previously, about storage presenting a relatively fixed interface to the outside world, and all this hard work that goes on, for example, mirroring and RAID to protect against disk drive failures, for example, controller clustering to protect against controller failure so that if you're accessing data through a controller and the controller fails, the access switches over to another controller and you don't miss a beat. All that hard work tends to be transparent to the server level and to the application level. But it's all happening. That's why there's such a difference between the price of storage at the raw disk drive level and the price of storage as it's delivered in an enterprise-class storage system.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages, and let's try to see the claims that have been made so far in terms of the next generation storage solutions that's been offered by multiple vendors out there. They are talking about better management simplicity that we were discussing just now, and then we talk about higher performance and also, of course, scalability, because of which the very thing has started. All of those things coming in one box or in one solution, it seems too good to be true, but let's see if truly is the case and at what price tag, and if it is worthwhile for organizations across the board who have such needs to, adopt such solutions and really get the true benefit in a reasonable amount of time for that ROI to be justified. So let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
401s, stock, mortgage, retirement, wealth. We cover it all. Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Wearing a football jersey doesn't make you an athlete, just like riding a motorcycle doesn't make you a bad boy. And starting a business doesn't make you a true entrepreneur. True entrepreneurs with purpose transform their world. There is something qualitatively different about them. They are risk takers. They turn the ordinary into the extraordinary, transform the problems into solutions, and they are among the leading visionaries of our time. True entrepreneurs are, in other words, agents of change for our society and our world. Join Elizabeth Page on Equinexus, Empowering Entrepreneurs Talk Radio Show, which airs live every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on the Voice America Business Network. Equinexus will introduce you to entrepreneurs as innovators and world-class leaders. Listen every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 12 p.m. Eastern, to meet the people who have done it. Meet the people behind the businesses and organizations that are changing the world. And you will realize how you can change your world, too. Tune in every Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, 12 Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network for Equinexus, Empowering Entrepreneurs, with host Elizabeth Page. It has been said that to live is to choose, but to choose well, you must know who you are and what you stand for, where you want to go, and why you want to get there. On Reap What You Sow, with host, performance management specialist, and executive coach, Alana Daly, achievement and success through expanding yourself and your life is available at the click of a mouse. Reap through redefining your goals. Educate your mind, your body, your conscious, and unconscious. Apply what you learn and plan, and it shall be. Success, over and over again, and wealth result when you reap regularly. Reap What You Sow with Alana Daly, broadcast each Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Reap What You Sow. Learn the rules of the game, then play better than anyone else.
The bottom line in business talk. Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Today's topic is next generation data storage beyond coolness, and our guest for today's show is Paul Massaglia. Paul is the chief technology strategist with Agami Systems. Before the break, we wanted to talk about the next generation data storage solutions that are being promised, are promised with very high scalability. That's a given, because of which we will buy things. Very high performance, and then on top of it, very simple to manage. All of those things in one solution looks a dream come true. Are these claims even real? That's what we need to see. And when we are talking about the price tag which is attached to it, is that justified? And when we put these solutions in place, how long is the gestation period for us to see the ROI come true?
Yet again with the broad sweeping question.
Yes, sir.
Let's see. Let's start with the cost, and we talked a little earlier about the Moore's law. I think in the data storage world, there's been sort of a discontinuity in this Moore's law, or whoever's law it is we're following as the price of storage diminishes steadily over time. The discontinuity started to happen maybe 5 years ago, and it continues today. And it was this. storage system suppliers noticed that storage device suppliers, the disk drive vendors, had kind of divided their product lines into two streams. One stream was disks that they built for the personal computer world, where cost per bit is everything. The performance considerations are not as great. The other stream was the so-called enterprise disk drive, where they were concentrating on high rotational speeds, mechanical robustness, full duty cycles, and so forth, at the expense of cost per bit, because the feeling was that enterprises would pay more for that data, for storing that data. But as we spoke of earlier, not all data has the same value to the enterprise, and in fact, the lower the cost per bit of delivered storage, the more data I'm willing to store online. So the storage system vendors started taking these low-cost disk drives and embedding them in storage systems, wrapping the same kind of logic around them that they wrapped around their high-end systems, and selling them as second-tier storage. And what has happened over time, and frankly, this is one of the value propositions on which my own company is built, is that the storage device vendors, the disk drive people, have said, whoa, they're buying a lot of our low-end disk drives to put into their systems. Let's see what we can do to add a little more value to those low-end disk drives. And in fact, what you see today is a generation of disk drives that go under the name of Enterprise SATA or Storage for Data at Rest. There's various names for it. But basically, these low-end disk drives have evolved to the point where they're delivering the same kind of robustness as the high-end disk drives. They're not delivering the same kind of data streaming performance per drive because they're spinning at lower speeds. But they're delivering higher density, equal robustness, and much lower cost per bit. And that's what's going into these tiered storage systems that you see more and more people purchasing today for their so-called data at rest. So that's on the hardware side. I think there's been some fairly significant under the covers innovation by the disk drive vendors. On the system side, there's been something equivalent, and I liken this to something that happened maybe, I don't know, started happening 20 years or so ago, when people started getting in a big way into relational databases. What they noticed was data had a lot of common characteristics. All names and addresses should be treated the same. All numeric fields should be treated the same. And they should make data independent of applications. And so they took a lot of that validation and checking type of logic out of the application, put it into the database system. As a result, the database systems, which were perceived as I/O intensive, actually became pretty computationally intensive. And today, we have a similar thing happening down one tier lower in the information technology chain, where with storage systems having file-level intelligence built into them, storage access, particularly on a large scale, as you were mentioning, becomes a pretty computationally intensive process. So you look at some of the storage systems that people are delivering today, and you see that they have more computational power in them than some of the computing systems that they were delivering 5 years ago. And as a result of that, we have the ability to put more value into the storage system than we did in the past. So, for example, we spoke earlier about storage systems with hundreds or even thousands of disk drives in them. When you get to that point, because disk drives are electromechanical devices, you are going to have disk drive failures, period, end of discussion. And so your whole philosophy needs to be, how can I proactively detect failures, perhaps even before they occur, and how can I do something about them inside the storage system, not showing anything to the outside world, the world that's accessing the data that's stored on me? How can I compensate for and recover from that by moving data off a disk drive that's about to fail and substituting a good drive for the bad one, and somehow alerting an administrator someplace to come and swap out this disk drive so that the next time a failure happens, I'm not exposed. All of that kind of logic and functionality is being built into the storage systems that are delivered today, and I think it will be enhanced and refined as we move forward, because the storage systems are just getting bigger in terms of the number of disk drives behind the head and things of that sort.
Now, what are the typical problems that you think, you know, the people who are handling storage at the infrastructure level, they come back to, and, you know, what are those chronic issues which, even in spite of all the innovation that has happened today, have not been solved, and those are things which are, you know, you get a lot of reports as vendors or even in enterprises, they say we need to have these issues solved. We could definitely do a better job at that. Would there be any chronic issues?
Failure detection, I think, is a fairly chronic issue where something will go wrong inside the storage system, and the storage system will do, and I speak not just of my own company systems, I think this is generally true throughout the industry. The storage system will do such a good job of compensating for it that the user won't notice that a failure has occurred, or the user won't attach the proper urgency to recovering from the failure, to restoring the system to full operational state, because the system's still working. It's still delivering on its promise to provide data for applications or provide data storage for applications. And so if it's not a crisis, people tend not to respond in a crisis manner. Somehow the industry has to figure out how to elevate the importance of that. Now, one technique that several companies, including my own, are using is they will actually ask their customers for permission for the storage system to, as people call it, phone home. When the storage system detects that something is wrong inside of it, even though it's still functioning and delivering data properly, there's some condition that needs to be remedied. Maybe it's chronically over temperature. Maybe there's a failed disk drive or a failing disk drive inside it. It will actually send a message back to our support organization saying, this system at this customer has this issue that needs to be dealt with. And in fact, in many cases, and this is a kind of a fairly popular anecdote you hear about periodically, a repairman will show up or a customer will get a call saying, your storage system has a problem and here I am with the part to fix it. So that's something that is already happening to a large extent in the industry, and as the scale of the storage systems rises over time, I think the industry is going to have to refine those capabilities and make them even better, for example, by enabling the customer to do his own replacement of certain parts in the system. So if you think about maybe a fan or a power supply failure, the storage system noticing that a failure has occurred, phoning home in addition to notifying the customer directly, of course, and having the home office call the customer and say, take part XYZ out of your spares kit and put it into slot P in your storage system before the customer ever knows that anything is wrong.
Now, talking about storage, we know that most of the conventional storage that we have available is still a hard disk moving at a fast speed and a header reading it, and, you know, basically mechanical in nature. And I'm definitely sure that, you know, what we call as random access memory or something which is memory resident, that could be much faster accessible and things of that nature. So is any possibility that we see in near future, in maybe 2050, where we would not have to deal with these moving disk drives and still get that, you know, unlimited, almost virtually unlimited amount of memory that's needed and that is accessible at a heartbeat, and you don't have that many moving parts, so you're also reducing the risk of wear and tear, and things will be good. So let's see if that kind of innovation is indeed happening. Something is in the R&D labs, or is it already hitting the market? And if there's a price tag which is not obscenely high, which will allow organizations to at least pilot it. Let's talk about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.avol.com today. Avol helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Avol delivers. To find out how Avol can help your company, visit www.avol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.avol, A-V-V-A-L, avol.com. Visit today.
Get into the trenches with the latest technology, innovations, and trends, and uncover what's really driving how businesses use technology to achieve maximum efficiencies in their operations. Host Dave Sassone and his guests will dig deep, analyze, and cut through the hype to bring you honest and thought-provoking discussions on the technology shaping the business world. Technically Speaking with Dave Sassone, broadcast live every Wednesday at 11 Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
In 1805, Lewis and Clark described in their journals a country teeming with wildlife.
Bison as far as the eye can see.
Rivers churning with fish.
They wrote of scenes of endless beauty and of meeting more than 100 nations of American Indian whose lives were one with our environment. Now, imagine what Lewis and Clark and the American Indians they met would say if they walked the trail today. Would they be pleased?
There are herds of homes where the buffalo once roamed.
Or would they feel differently?
Something must be done to save what's left of this great place.
As we commemorate the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, we encourage you to consider what's been lost and what we can do to preserve what's left of the trail that still winds through us all. Walk with Lewis and Clark and see what you discover at www.lewisandclark200.org.
This is a public service message of the National Council of the Lewis and Clark Bicentennial, the Missouri Historical Society, and the Ad Council.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business, this is Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Today's topic is next-generation data storage. Beyond coolness, our guest for today's show is Paul Massaglia. Paul is the Chief Technology Strategist with Agami Systems. We spoke before the break about the new version, which is a dream-come-true version of storage, where we don't have any moving parts and we don't have that much wear and tear. We get the access to the data that we want in a heartbeat, and it does not cost as much. How far are we from that dream yet?
Well, we're kind of at a constant distance, I think, because the electronic technologies, particularly flash memory, to which you're alluding, continue to improve at a pretty good clip. You probably have at least a couple gigabytes in your cell phone or in your Trio or whatever handheld device you use, but as fast as that technology improves and is deliverable at a price point, the need for storage at the enterprise level increases. And so I think we have a long and healthy future for traditional electromechanical rotating storage as we know it. Now, having said that, I'll also say that increasingly electronic memory is being used inside the storage device. It's pretty common today to have tens of megabytes of cache inside even an individual disk drive, and more particularly inside the storage system. One of the things that my company does, where I think we're a little bit ahead of the pack, is we put a lot of cache memory inside our systems. And this enables us to deliver the kind of performance that people expect from enterprise-class storage using those low-cost disk drives that we talked about earlier. There's a couple of other technologies, of course, that are on the horizon that haven't really shown up commercially yet. The most promising or significant one that I know about is something called microelectronic memory systems, where the technology that's used in, for example, LCD slide projectors, very, very tiny moving parts that move over a very limited range, actually simulate disk drives, or more accurately, they simulate little strips of tape with many, many read heads. And these have the promise of, for example, putting, let's say, 10 to 100 gigabytes of storage on a chip with apparently no moving parts, much more mechanically robust than a rotating disk drive would be. But the whole issue around all of these technologies is around the cost per delivered bit. As long as rotating storage is an order of magnitude or more less expensive than these mechanical technologies, and as long as the need for keeping data online is at least stable and continuing to grow, then I think we're going to have electromechanical disk drives with us as the primary data center technology. Now, that's not to say that things won't happen. Another cusp that I think we're approaching is the move from the current form factor for disk drives, the so-called 3.5-inch brick, down to a smaller form factor, maybe the 2.5-inch drive that's pretty common in laptop computers. We may see something like that emerge at the enterprise level, for the very simple reason that as the capacity of disk drives has increased, before this year is out, I think we'll see the first single disk drive that offers a terabyte of storage delivered from a vendor. What has not increased is the ability to get at that data. You still have one actuator, you still have one set of heads, and you can get at one block of that data at a time. And the only way to increase that, the only way to increase the number of IOs per second per gigabyte, is to put a smaller number of gigabytes under each actuator, and that means going to a smaller disk form factor. So I think we'll see innovation in a couple of dimensions. One, increased use of purely electronic memory, flash and volatile memory both, in storage systems, and two, a move to a smaller form factor for the rotating electromechanical disk drive.
All right, we have one last question before we close the show, but that is very important, is that all this innovation that is happening needs to adhere to some sort of standards, because we have seen so many new technology innovations falling flat on their face because we have got 2,000 best practices that evolve because every vendor wants to tout their own. What's happening in the area of storage, and are we safe to say that if we pick up one storage or innovative storage mechanism today and we go tomorrow to expand that capability to something else and we happen to go to another vendor, we will not have to revamp the whole thing again?
So we did bring this up earlier where we said that most of the innovation that goes on inside the storage system is masked from other tiers in the data center because of the fact that storage has had some of the most enduring standards, external interface standards, of any part of information technology. I think probably the only place that outdoes storage in stability of standards is the enterprise networking world. You connect everything to everything because there are standards, pure and simple. Now, having said that, I'll also say that the storage community is on the cusp of change in this area as well. So all of our major standards are kind of due for a major important revamps. In the SCSI area, we see this so-called Internet SCSI, where disk drive protocols are carried on the enterprise Ethernet-based network, largely Ethernet-based network. That's starting to come into play, and you see a couple of companies, including my own, that are delivering storage systems that act as though they were disk drives that were fiber channel connected or SCSI connected, but they actually use your TCP/IP infrastructure to access raw devices. In the file system access world, we see NFS is about to undergo a major transition. Some vendors already have support for so-called NFS version 4 in their products. It's not widely adopted, to my knowledge, yet in the user community. But if we have this conversation again in 12 months, I think you'll see a significant uptick in the adoption level.
And then on behalf of the show and our listeners, I would really like to thank you, Paul, for sharing your experience and insight about how innovation in storage infrastructure and overall solutions that are being delivered can actually help organizations meet their needs that they have today and also the needs that they may have tomorrow.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Thanks again. Now, business needs are changing, as we all see, and we would like to now keep all information that we ever generated for times to come. In addition, we would like this capacity to come to us cheap, and in terms of actual technology and the people that manage it, even that cost should be kept at the minimum. We want storage to be unlimited. We want it to be simple to manage and high-performing, and it is definitely a tall order, as we see. We hope that we are able to make a business case for it with executive management, and the vendor community follows common standards and stringent standards and offer solutions that truly meet our needs. Are there any challenges that your organization is facing related to building simpler, better, and faster storage infrastructure? Please share your story with us at views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thanks again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Gall, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.